You're listening to Radio Golf Show.
Yeah, please tell them that we're doing it in English.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're doing this in English, I've just been told. This is Frank Forster and Mark Horner with the 72nd episode of Radio Golf Show. Welcome, everybody. Mark, we have a very special guest today, and would you please do the honor and introduce her?
Of course. Good evening, everyone. Today's guest might be living proof that golf favors the patient and that persistence will eventually prevail. In her amateur years, among other achievements, she won the 2006 English Women's Open Amateur Stroke Play Championship. What a title! And in 2008, the English Amateur Order of Merit. Together with Naomi Edwards, Gary Boyd, and Danny Willett, she won the 2007 Spirit International Amateur Golf Championship in Texas. In 2008, our guest and her team won the 2008 European Ladies Team Championship. And also in 2008, she was part of the Great Britain and Ireland squad at the Curtis Cup in St. Andrews. In 2009, she turned professional and became a full-time member of the Ladies European Tour. During her first 13 years on tour, her best finish was a tied fourth at the 2013 Alliance Ladies Slovak Open. But in September 2022, during the VP Bank Swiss Ladies Open in Holzhäuser, just weeks before her 40th birthday, she played a stunning final round of 69 to beat Lynn Grant by one stroke.
Yay.
And leave a whole pack of young guns way behind her. Thus, seizing her first, as they call it, maiden tour win, after 199 starts and 17 top 10 finishes after 14 years of competing professionally. The blue cow-formed wooden prize now sits on the mantelpiece of her home in Hampshire and has been named Daisy by her six-year-old daughter. Besides being an active tour member, she's one of three player directors on the LAT board, along with Catriona Matthew and Eleanor Givens. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Liz Young.
Thank you. That was the longest intro I've ever had.
Not bad. He's very good at that.
Yeah. Well, you sound really good.
In all kinds of languages, not just in English. He's excellent at that.
Well, you should hear mine in French. They're really short.
Wait a minute. You know, I read that interview you did with Mark, and you know, I thought it was like around the 200th start. It was actually the 200th start where you won your first. That's pretty amazing. That's got to be some good karma right there.
Yeah, definitely. But it was definitely worth waiting for. That's for sure.
So, how have things been? Because it's been quite a ride this year, isn't it? Hasn't it? You know, first win. Have things changed? Does it change the player? Does it change the perspective of people around you now being a tour champion, you know, do sponsors line up in front of your doors or?
I wish.
Do they send you the courtesy car to the airport? Do you fly business?
No.
Things changed.
I've played a few events, obviously, since the Swiss Open. I feel in myself that now I've proved to myself that I can compete out there. So when I'm going into the tournament now, I do feel like as I've got that win behind me, and maybe I stand that little bit taller on the putting green, knowing that I can win. But everything else now, we're still flying economy. We're still doing all the flights myself, trying to budget on the cheapest airlines and the cheapest hotels and finding the car deals. Unfortunately, the women's game doesn't earn the same equivalent as the men's. But yeah, it's definitely a great feeling and one that I never thought after 14 years would come. But yeah, in 2022, it did.
And
you didn't just beat, you know, anybody. You beat the number one ranked woman on the tour, Lynn Grant, yes, who had just won that tournament, that mixed tournament with the men.
Yeah, I mean, that made it even more special because a win is obviously a win. Doesn't matter who you beat. But when you beat the number one player on our tour at the moment, and she's a fantastic golfer, she's obviously a lot younger than me and she's just starting her career and she's going to be a world beater for sure. So to beat her by one shot, and I knew she was breathing down my neck the whole 18 holes, makes it that little bit special.
Yeah, I can imagine that because there was quite a few very young, very, very good players. It wasn't only Lynn. There were quite a few. I think there was eight nearly grabbing the title or quite close to you. So it was your persistence that played out at the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just holding on and not making any mistakes in the last few holes. Obviously, I was ahead going into the last day, so they had to catch me. So it was up to me whether to lose it. And I just kept going, playing my own game plan. And luckily, I had that extra shot at the end of it.
Right. I heard that that you and finally somebody on the women's tour or the men's tour admitted that they're actually scoreboard watchers when they can, that you want to know where you stand. I mean, I don't understand all these guys or gals who win and they're like, oh, I don't really watch the scoreboard.
Yeah.
How can you play in a tournament trying to win a tournament if you don't know where you are? But you are a scoreboard watcher.
Yeah, I am a scoreboard watcher, but unfortunately there weren't many scoreboards that week. And there was a scoreboard at the back of the 16th green, but unfortunately I hadn't hit the best shot into the green. So I had a tricky two-putt, it was in the end, which I had to concentrate on. So I didn't have time to look at the leaderboard and walk to the back of the green. But then on the 18th, I was playing with a good friend in the final round. And I said to her, I was like, do you have any idea of the situation? And she's like, well, yeah, I can tell you what the scoreboard was on the 16th. And I was like, oh, please do. And she's like, well, you had a two shot lead then. But obviously Lynn's played 17 and 18 by now. And I was like, OK, well, she'll have definitely birdied 17 because it's a par five and she hits it a lot longer than I do. Mm-hmm. And she can easily reach that in two. So I was like, right. So I was thinking on the last hole that the putt I had was either to get into a playoff or maybe win. But I was thinking a playoff because these top players, they always seem to find that extra birdie somewhere. And I was thinking she's probably birdied the last two just to make me work a little bit harder.
How long was the last putt?
Oh, I left it a bit short, so it was a good 5 feet.
Oh, so it was a knee knocker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Knocker. 5 foot up the hill, right to left.
My favorite type of putt.
Yeah. We're not putting off the green. You just said something. Sorry, Frank. Sorry, I had to.
Liz, we played in this course, Green Eagle, which is one of the best courses in Germany, where they play the men's tour.
Porsche.
And I hit a beautiful shot on a par three. And I ended up putting off the green into the water. I'll never hear the end of it from him.
No, you won't.
No, you're never going to hear the end of it because I laughed. And just to make this clear, because I laughed and I was pin high and the green looked like somebody had put an elephant under a sheet. Really, no lie. This course is really tough. It's really, really tough.
Yeah.
And we were playing from the, so I left my shot to the left of the hole and I was laughing about his putt going into the water.
As was I.
And yes, we were. And then I tried to put my putt somewhere near the hole and it just trickled past the hole and trickled and trickled and trickled. It went into the water exactly. Frank's balls.
Finally, we hear the whole story. Thank you.
It's a family story, Frank. We'll be telling this for the next 20 years. We're going to stop this.
Yeah. You'll never forget it.
Yeah, but that green is like the hood of a...
Something you said earlier on, if I may, which I thought was nice, but a bit very interesting. You said you didn't really believe that it would happen.
No.
You just said so you didn't believe it would happen again.
No, I mean,
you've been out there so long that you know you're a journey woman. You go out there to play. It's your life. It's your livelihood. It's what you do for work. But you didn't really believe in winning anymore.
No, because I mean, 14 years is a long time. And like you said in the introduction, fourth, I've had a lot of fourths, never any better. I've never lost my tour card, which is fantastic. You know, I'm definitely your steady golfer. I never really before this year had low enough rounds consecutively to compete right at the top. And yes, I've had it's been a great career that I haven't ever had a year where I've had to go back to tour school or even being close to going back to tour school. But then I've never had a year where I've gone, I lost that tournament, or, you know, I should have won that tournament. This was the first tournament where I was actually competing and felt I was good enough to win.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, 14 years never losing your card. I mean,
amazing. It's more amazing than not winning.
Actually. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, you see, last year was my, I had a year, I thought it was quite impressive that I played every event that I played in, I didn't miss a cut.
Wow. That was 2022 or 2021? Sorry.
2021.
Wow.
And that was I've been on tour 13 years, and my 13th year was my first year where every event I played in, I made the cut.
What I find incredible is that in those 14 years, the game has changed dramatically.
Oh, hugely. And the women's game, I think, has changed. I know we always talk about the men's game, how it's changed with the length and the fitness and everything like that. But the women's game, the standard has just exploded in those 14 years that I've been on tour. Mm.
And you still do your thing.
I still do my thing, yeah. I mean, it's a... I've been with my coach now probably 10 years, and we've just been constantly working on the same things. And it wasn't till probably last winter where the stuff that we'd been working on for the last 9 years started to come through in the game.
Right. But wait a minute, you're a mother. When do you have time to work on your game?
Not much. I tell you what, being a mum, and I think it's probably the same for all working mums out there, whatever they do, suddenly their time, you're so much more efficient.
Yeah.
Before having a child, and I just had a job, and I lived with my husband and you had a house to clean and whatever, but you just had your job. So you had all day to do everything that you possibly wanted. So I'd start with going to the gym in the morning. My husband would go to work. I'd go to the gym. I'd spend the morning at the gym. I'd then come home. I'd maybe do a bit of putting practice at home. I'd then have lunch. And then I'd go to the golf course, do some practice. And then my husband would come in the summers, would join me at the golf course after work, and we'd play a few holes. We'd go back for dinner whenever we wanted, cook dinner. And I'd do that 5-6 days a week. And then suddenly when you've got a little one around, that's more important than anything. Some days where before she was at school, I was only getting like maybe 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. If I could find, you know, mum and dad could babysit, or my husband's parents could babysit, or she was in nursery. And those 2 hours, suddenly your practice, it was like, right, what do I need to work on? This is key. This is at the top. I've got 2 hours. Let's go. No messing around. No talking to anybody. I've got those 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And my practice, yes, I practice way less than I did 6 years ago, but my practice is so much more efficient.
Wow.
So it's more pressurized, isn't it? It's just like...
It is.
Like everything you do, you probably do with more efficiency, but you know, I can imagine that it does even have a positive effect on your practicing, because if you know you can't talk to Mr. Smith, who's seen you around, who wants to talk to you about your missed cut last year, whatever, you just
it's like I'd drop her off at nursery at say 8:30, I'd be at the golf course for 9, and I knew at 12:30 I'd have to pick her up, so it's like I've got those hours, don't you dare rain, because I hate playing in the rain.
Ow. It never rains in southern.
You know, that was always the typical thing. It's like, right, I've got the she's in nursery in the morning, and it would chuck it down in the morning and be sunny in the afternoon. I'm like, oh, that's no bloody good, is it? So it was like, I just really focused my practice.
Can we mention which golf club you play out of in England?
Yeah, I play out of Brockenhurst Manor Golf Club, which is in the New Forest. So it's a Brockenhurst Manor.
Brockenhurst Manor. I love those names. Brockenhurst Manor. I play at Brockenhurst Manor. Where do you play? Yeah. Super.
It's a typical forest course. Got the deer on it. It's really lovely, especially in the summertime. It's a great place to be. But yeah, so that's where, and the gym really went out the window when she was younger, because I had to really prioritize what I needed to work on.
Right.
But yeah, since she's gone to school, she's in her second year now of school, and I do have some time back, because I've got 9 till 3 now, every Monday to Friday.
But it sounds like you never even thought about, now I'm a mom and I have a child, I'm going to start playing. It doesn't sound like you even considered.
No, that never, when obviously me and my husband were talking about children, it wasn't like, okay, well, you know, let's have a child and then you go and find another job or, you know, stay at home. It was right. We're going to have a child and we're just going to carry on because I still love it.
It's your job. Like you said, I think
it's my job. And as long as I can, my rule is, I've always had this rule, as long as I can earn a living from it and I still enjoy it, then I'm going to still keep playing. Those are the two things. And when I turned pro, I was only going to do this for a couple of years.
Right.
And then it just escalated. And now anybody that knows golf, if you're an amateur golfer, if you just play every Saturday, if you're a professional golfer, it's addictive. It really is. Yeah. If you love the game, it's addictive. Doesn't matter what level you're at.
Even for somebody out there playing for their livelihood. That's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Did you really manage to play for your living all these 13 years? Was it enough to survive? Did you make enough money to survive? Because we would, it's a very,
with my husband's help, there was, I mean, with my husband, I couldn't do it I couldn't live on my own, pay the mortgage, pay all the bills on my, no, because I don't have any sponsorship. So it's pretty, you know, the women's game doesn't earn what the men's game does. We're getting better, definitely. But in those early years, when the tournaments really weren't that big a prize money, I don't think you could own a home or even rent a home without help from sponsors or something like that.
Yeah, we just looked at the prize money of that. The prize money for the whole tournament that you won was like €200,000. I mean, that's what that's what Pat Perez gets for showing up in Jeddah.
That's it. Yeah, that's
pretty sick.
Yeah, it's something that needs, you know, obviously we're all working on it. Women's sport in general, you know, you compare a woman footballer to a male footballer. It's chalk and cheese. Same in the cricket world, same in the golf world. Right. It's getting closer,
right?
But it's still miles apart.
Well, only tennis has really stepped up. Sorry, Mark. Only tennis at Wimbledon and I think the US Open are the ones who pay.
Yes.
Equally, you know,
but then I don't know what their rate is if in a normal ATP tour event.
This I don't know also.
But definitely the likes of Wimbledon and US Open. I mean, that must massively help the women's game there when they're certainly earning those big salaries.
Mm-hmm.
But then tennis has always been a sport where women have been watched, right? There's always been a certain amount of attention. They've had their superstars, you know. Even I'm not a tennis fan or a tennis aficionado, you know. Navratilova, Steffi Graf, you know, these are household names all over the world.
And that's what's so great with the majors for the tennis is they're playing on the set. They're playing at the same place. Yeah. So you, as a spectator, you can go and watch the men's game and then you can go and watch a women's game or a mixed game. And you've got the opportunity to watch both. A bit like the Scandinavian mix for us earlier this year, the ISPS World Invitation for us this year. We're playing at the same places as the men. Mm-hmm. So spectators have the choice to watch both.
Wasn't there an event? I don't know what tour it was, where there was a player from the LET, a man from the Challenge Tour, and a guy from the Seniors Tour.
Yeah, we used to play that out. We had 1 year of that in Jordan.
Yeah, that was a MENA tour, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, it was Challenge Tour, Senior Tour, and Ladies European Tour.
Right.
Three tours, all playing for one prize.
Only happened once. Only that one year.
Yeah.
I remember that from the different tees, and it was, you know, found it was very exciting.
Yeah, so that's what we do with the Scandinavian mix now with the European Tour. And we've done that for 2 years now. But then the Irish ISPS Irish World Champion World Invitation, that is a European Tour, or DP World, I should say, DP World and Ladies European Tour, two courses, but two separate prize funds. So $1.5 million for the men, $1.5 million for the women. Mm. And we just alternate on the tee times.
Okay.
But the payment gap, or the wage gap, is horrendous still. You know, why? You know, we've talked about this once, but and I really liked your perspective on it. But
I believe that. I mean, the media. If you pick up a golf magazine, you're most likely it's going to be very much male orientated. You're going to see the Rory McIlroys, the Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth. You're not going to see a woman, you know, showing the women's swing or giving their view on something. TV. When you turn on the TV to watch women's golf, it's not women's golf, it's men's golf. We're always on the odd time or on the red button in the UK on Sky, or we're just constantly pushed to the sidelines. And I think if we had a bigger base on the media, on the social media, on the TV, on the papers, everything like that, then I think more of the general public would engage with us and then actually want to follow us. And then I think if the numbers got up, then I think then the media would then switch over.
Yeah, because basically all LET tournaments I've been to were fantastic, family friendly, great events with interaction. Laura Funstück once told me that if she plays three rounds of golf and has people following her, she'll probably know the names of these people after 3 days, because they're, you know, there are only about 10 people out there. So, which I thought was great for the interaction, though it's terrible because your golf is so good, and the women's game has turned into such a good ambassador nowadays for the game, for the values of this game. Also, you know, not only the sport has become better, but I think it looks a bit more like the golf a lot of us would want to have. You know,
The guys, you know, your typical male amateur could actually hit the ball like a female professional. You know, there's no way a male amateur could hit it like a Tiger Woods or a Rory McIlroy. I mean, it's just not possible. Whereas you could actually, if you look at a woman's swing, you could actually imitate that and actually learn a lot from you could learn a lot more from the women's game than you can from the males.
Absolutely. I had a pro who said, like, he once told me that exactly that, because we were looking for it's about 20 years ago. And I said, well, whose swing should I look at? And, you know, and he said, well, try Annika.
Yeah.
Try Annika, because that, you know, that would probably be, you're bigger than Annika, but from all the angles you get, try Annika.
He's like 6'6".
but you can relate to it.
Except with that swing, Annika shoots 66 and you'll still shoot 86.
Yeah, but I'm 6'6".
But even in the States, Liz, you know, and you're familiar with it, the big LPGA tour events, there's only even you know, what are considered majors, there's really a handful of spectators there.
Yeah,
you know, it's not the 10 deep when there's and Mark, you know, I don't know if you remember, we had this conversation with Bill Harmon when he was on.
Yeah.
About the women's tour. And he said something to the effect that every tour, no, doesn't matter whether it's men, women, seniors, juniors, whatever, every tour needs heroes and villains, the characters on the tours. Remember he said that, Mark?
Yes, exactly.
And I think, and I agree with you that it's really the media pushing this.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, and it started with the I remember a time in the 80s or 90s when the seniors tour in the US was more interesting than the men's tour, because you had those guys like Trevino and Watson, going to the seniors tour, and the field there was always and they were that I was in my 20s, but then I could relate to their game when they were in the 50s. I think that's and I don't know how it's going to change. Because where do the extra viewers come from? How many people really still watch live golf on TV, period? I mean, now when you look at the numbers that Liv is getting on YouTube, it's really not that they're really not knocking the cover off the ball with the viewership.
No.
So I don't know. What do you think?
It's getting harder and harder, obviously, because there's so many other things that people can do nowadays. Mm-hmm. We're competing against not only sport but every other entertainment out there.
Right.
So it's like you said, you've got to have, it's not, take me for example, it's not just Liz the golfer. You have to have the story, you have to have the villain or the hero, or there needs to be a story behind the person, and then the fans can really get engaged behind those people. They can have their favorites, they can have the ones that they don't like, and then it becomes much more of an entertainment, because all sport, especially golf, were entertainment.
Mm. Absolutely. Just remember last year, Bryson DeChambeau and Bruce Koepka.
Yeah. Yeah.
That void they were playing up, or was it last or the year before last? I can't remember, but it was like Coronation Street.
But it brings the media then plays on that, then it's in the headlines, it's all over the social medias, and boom, golf gets that hit that it needs.
Even if it was manufactured.
The media does sort of jump onto, which I thought, it's probably what the media are looking for, but they jump onto the sex element of the female or the women's game. I remember them, basically nearly shooting up Michelle Wee's skirt, right? Because she bent down with her long legs, and everyone was all about her legs, and it was never about her game. It was always about her legs.
Unfortunately, that's where with women's sport, it can, tennis has gone down that road, and it's, we're athletes. You never see that on the men's side of the game.
Thank God. Jesus Christ.
I think it's important to say we are athletes, and just to stress that point, there's an interesting documentary out on YouTube called The Founders. It's about the first generation of ladies PGA players. It's free to view, and it's 1.5 hours, and that was the exact sentence. These women had huge problems even being accepted as athletes. There was always, you always had to have the nice smile, your hair needs to be nice, but you're not an athlete, you're just basically a woman playing golf. And they fought for that against that food.
Oh, the amount of times I've played in LET pro-ams and I've played with people and they said, so what do you do for a job? And I'm like, this is my job. Oh, don't you have another job? No, this is what I do full-time, funnily enough. Would you ever dare ask a man on the DP World Tour?
What's your real job?
Yeah. It's like, and that's not just me. I bet you could ask every LET golfer who plays in pro-ams regularly, and I guarantee you they'll have been asked that question too.
There's our first scoop, Mark. That's the first scoop we got. Let me ask you this quickly. what effect do you think events like the Solheim Cup and the Olympics have for the women's game? Is that some kind of springboard?
I think the Solheim is definitely huge. And depending on what happens with the Ryder Cup now with Liv and everything going on, the Solheim Cup, that could actually make it even bigger, because we're guaranteed to have the top the best players, 12 players from Europe and America fighting it out against each other. And that's what makes both these competitions worth watching and so great. It definitely springboards it, you know, girls, Europeans, Americans, they thrive to get on those teams. I mean, girls I know that have played on it say it's their best experience, their best golfing experience of their lives. The Olympics is a funny one. It depends, I think, on what country you're from.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in the Indian girls, the Chinese girls, golf being in the Olympics is huge for them. Huge. Yeah. It makes them become superstars because those countries are very Olympic-based sports. Whereas for Great Britain, the Olympics, would I prefer to win an Olympic gold medal or a major? Definitely a major.
Right. Well, you know, the British are a lot like the Germans. We can't afford the dressage to be on.
Yeah.
We don't know when it's over and we don't know who is winning, but we can't wait to watch it.
Eddie Lizard. Yeah.
So the Olympics is for golf worldwide. Mm-hmm. It's great that it's in the Olympics, but I think it's very specific on which countries you're from.
Right. And then maybe one last question for me before Mark comes back. You know, when we spend a lot, we had the two guys from Sweden on who played in the final of the British boys, one 17-year-old, one 18-year-old from Sweden. And bringing juniors into the men's game, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, how that works. And it's very competitive from early on. Mark's son is in this scene, if I may say so. College in the United States, you know, it's really a program that starts like that. How is that for the women, for the girls?
I went through the college system in the States just to get that experience. Yeah. I was at the University of Iowa.
Oh my God, a Hawkeye.
Yeah, I sure was.
Oh, wow.
Hawkeye through and through. And it was a great experience. You wouldn't get that definitely anywhere in England and probably nowhere in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
With any of the sports that they offer, the scholarship programs, you get the education, you get the training, and if you're lucky enough to be on a scholarship, it's all paid for. So right. You get great competitive practice and proper training. And I think it's a step towards the professional level. So it's preparing you if you want to take that next step to the pro level. And a lot of Sweden is a prime example. Their federation is hugely well run. They mix the men's and the women's, the pros and the amateurs, and they have this system, and they all go through it. And it's hard work, but they're getting them ready if they want to turn pro.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, it's highly professional there. You know, we were talking to Albert and Didrik. Indoor playing fields, indoor chipping areas, pitching areas, huge
putting. Yeah, I mean, I was at Iowa 20 years ago, and we had an indoor facility, putting and hitting into nets, and then we could use the indoor dome of the football arena. So obviously it's cold in Iowa, so they had their football training pitch outside, and then they had a football pitch in a dome inside.
Yeah.
And when they weren't using it, we could use it for pitching practice. You know, it's 100 yards long, so yeah. We were doing that. And then we would travel south to the warmer weather too.
Right.
But they've got it all sussed out in America with their university programs, which is fantastic. And they open it up to the world. If you're good enough, it doesn't matter if you're American or not, you can go there.
Well, I think we've seen this. We've got some really good players here in Germany, but most of the players who make it or can take this jump, this leap of faith into the professional scene, most of them were in America in college. Yeah. Is that not true?
Yeah.
How about some quick nines?
I think that sounds terrific. It's just about that hour. For the quick nine. All right, fasten your seatbelt, Liz. This is going to be
all right. Here we go.
Quick nines, no thinking. Well, you can have it. They're never nine. Okay. What's the toughest hole you've ever played?
Oh, wow. I started at a hole I think probably Royal Lytham starting on that par three. That's pretty brutal. Starting on a par three is never
starting
fun.
on a par three. Yeah.
It's just, and then with all those bunkers and everything, and it's not short, it's just like, oh no.
Like a 3 iron at like 3 Celsius, yeah. You know, that kind
yeah,
of
thing. That's it. And it's just like, oh no, really? No, this could, you know, this could, it could be a lot worse than just a bogey here.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All right. Great. Second question. We're all going to die. You are going to die too. Your last round. Who are you going to play your last round with?
My husband.
I love that.
Oh, let's talk about him for a second. Yeah. Is he a good golfer?
Yeah, he is. He he plays off probably plus one. He hasn't played much.
Do you give him shots or no? Do you
go no, it's great. We play off the whites, and we play for things like cooking the dinner, washing up, putting Isabel to bed.
Yeah, all right.
It's serious stuff. Yeah.
How is this? Is it pretty even or
is
somebody...
It is pretty even. Oh, okay. It is so pretty even. Exciting. Yeah, no, he gives me a good run for his money.
Well, there you go. Well, on your next match, I put a fiver on you.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Frank, she'll probably come back to that. You know, she makes a living out of playing golf. You know? All right. Well, what would you be if you hadn't become a professional golfer?
I did an economics degree and I always wanted to work in the city. In London, I was
going
to work in
girl.
Finance. Yeah, I was. Yeah, that's what I wanted to be. And even after 2 years of being on the pro tour, I wanted to still go and do that. But yeah, no.
Okay.
Now
here
not.
Here comes one of our question for the city girl. Okay. Here comes one of our favorites. You have won the Ladies Open Championship. You and your mates decide to celebrate at a karaoke club. What's the first song you'll sing to open up the evening? What's the last song you're going to sing when all is said and done and everyone's drunk and you might be too? Two songs.
Oh,
one
my
to
word.
Start.
Two evening, songs.
One to it. I can tell you that Ben Crenshaw took about at least a minute of silence to get that question.
Yeah, that's hard. People that know me know that they would have probably never heard me sing at a karaoke bar. I am not that person to do
there
karaoke.
There will be a playlist. There will be a playlist. So,
Bon Jovi probably "Living on a Prayer" would
there
be.
There you go. That's
the
a
first
good start.
And then probably everybody would leave the club straight after that when they heard that. So I probably wouldn't need to do a second one, but the end of the night. Oh, that's a tough one. When everybody's left and I'm drunk, anything could happen there.
What do I think to myself?
I'd probably try and do an Adele song or something, you know.
Oh, yes.
Something that I couldn't pitch at
right
all, there. Anywhere near it. It would sound horrendous, but I'd think it'd
going
sound
for
great.
The flop shot at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Tight life. She's gone.
Well, if everyone's drunk, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Have you got a special song or should I just choose one for you?
Yeah, no, I'd probably just hit the random button on the karaoke machine and go for it.
All right. Because there is a Golf Shell playlist and you'll be part of this now. And there's all sorts of very interesting songs there.
And, yeah, okay. We haven't had Adele.
Next question. Your daughter has decided to become a professional golfer. What piece of advice would you give her? Don't do it.
Yeah, first of all, I would probably tell her to do it. It's a lot harder than you think. No, I just tell her to make the most of it and enjoy it. And as long as you enjoy it, keep doing it. But as soon as you stop enjoying it, then you need to get out. Because it's I've seen it happen to girls and guys. When you stop enjoying it and there's no way out and you just keep trying, I think that's the hardest thing. And to watch it,
that's when
as
you
well.
Start robbing banks and stuff like that.
Dream
team, you get to choose three golfers to play around with, dead or alive. Who would they be, why, and where would you like to play?
Okay, so we'd have to have the husband again.
Ooh,
I do
very popular husband.
I'm playing golf without
I need husband, some tips from. I need some tips from him later.
Yeah, I get a lot of tips from him.
Well, I need tips how to be.
You do. You really do. Sorry, I had to do that. I had to ask.
Ernie Els, he was always my favourite golfer growing up.
Oh, wow.
So I would always have, I just loved his swing growing up. Obviously, big easy, swinging it easy. And I do try and copy that still to this day. And then Dame Laura Davis, because, I mean, she is just the pinnacle of English women's golf for me. And growing up.
She's a trailblazer, isn't she?
She is, And I, you know, when I was playing in junior opens and I'd win it and you'd see her name on the trophy, it was just such a buzz when you know, like, I've won the same trophy as her, which was, it was great. That would be my four ball. And we would probably play, in the UK, we'd probably play at Woburn on the Duke's course. That is my favourite golf course in the country, so.
Woburn. You just mentioned that before, Mark, when we were talking, didn't you?
Yeah, Woburn. I met someone from Woburn, and I took a look at the course then because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really on my map. Well, it is on my map, but it wasn't that much on my map. And it is, that stunning. Is the private club you were talking about. You know, that is, it's so well kept. It looks a bit like the British Augusta, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You get. And this is something for the you get to play, no, you get to replay one single shot of your career.
Ooh.
What shot would it be?
Oh, that's hard. There's a lot of shots I'd want to replay.
200 starts. Do you know how many strokes that is, Mark?
I can't do the math. It's too much. It's 202 starts. Let me do the math. Right now, actually.
One shot. Oh my word.
Is there one single shot that you sometimes lie awake in bed rethinking and saying, why the hell didn't I trust my gut? Why didn't I take the
part? Oh, there's more than one. There's more than one out there. I probably, it'd be going back to when I was an amateur.
Why not?
Yeah. It was the Curtis Cup at St. Andrews. And I was in the bunker on the 16th. And there were a lot of people around. And I tried to get out of it the hard way and failed miserably. And it was funny because the press were there and they actually took a picture, which was in the Daily Telegraph the next day, of me in the bunker smiling. And it was like, people would have thought that I'd got out and everything was all right. And actually, no, I was just smiling just in like fear of, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now?
The sands of Liz Taylor?
It's just, Liz
Young, sorry.
Yeah.
Liz Taylor's nice.
It's,
I'm not wearing my glasses.
Yeah, but because it was photographed, I think about it all the time.
But let me maybe hook in there. How long does it take after a round, competitive round, for you to decompress and work the round through in your head? Do you do it immediately after the round is finished? Do you hours later lie in bed and think, my God, and you go through the round? Does it stay with you for days sometimes if it's the last round of a tournament?
No, I'm pretty quick. Once I'm off the golf course, maybe within an hour, I'm then on to, because I'm very much of a golfer of one shot at a time. If it's in the past, it's in the past. You can't change it. Hit it, find it, hit it again.
Right.
And I don't like to think about it. It's like, obviously, our rounds, we play four rounds for a competitive round, so you've got to play that hole four times. You've got to hit that shot four times off the tee. If you start looking back at, oh my gosh, look what I did yesterday. Remember what I did yesterday over there. Yeah. Da 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 da. Yeah. It's just, that's the hardest thing with golf. You can't go in the past. You can't go in the future. You have to stay in the present. If you come out of the present area, then oh my word, the mind just goes. Yeah.
Would you agree with the statement that bad golfers remember their good shots after a round, and good golfers remember the bad shots?
No, I think good golfers don't remember the shots.
What's the weakest part of your game?
My short game is terrible compared to the rest.
Who would you like to swap with?
Short game's terrible. Tour for 14 years.
Yeah, no, it's really not that good.
Well, the stats and your scrambling stats aren't that good, are they?
No, they're not. Okay.
Sorry.
I hit a lot of fairways. I hit a lot of greens, but when I miss greens, there's a lot of pressure on me suddenly because I know my short game isn't up to scratch of where I want it to be. It's getting better, like everything in my game, but yeah, it's not up there yet.
Very quick answers, please. Links or Parkland?
Parkland.
Beer or wine?
Wine.
Music on the range?
Yes.
Fish or meat?
Fish.
You get to change one rule, and I know what it is you're going to change because I've already asked you this question. I'm going to ask it again. You get to change one rule. What would it be?
If you're in a divot on the fairway, you should get relief. You've hit a good shot.
We've been discussing this, actually, because I quoted you in another context, and then someone says, someone's always going to say, yeah, but. What's a divot? When do you start to define a divot? You know, is it an old divot? How young must this divot be? How fresh must it be? You know what I mean?
People
were saying like, okay, no, just play it as it lies because you'll be starting to discuss this until the sun goes down. I thought that was
I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious if you're in a proper divot or not. I mean, you're always going to get chances out there. You always get chances out there with the rules of golf now. Oh, yeah, can I get a free drop because of da-da-da-da-da.
Patrick Reed would find a divot everywhere.
Yeah, well, you know, you're always going to get... But 99% of the golfing population, which is great, are honest golfers. And
absolutely.
If it's in a divot, it's in a divot. You should get relief.
Do you sometimes dream of golf? If yes, are they good or bad dreams? Do you recall a dream? And would you share?
Oh, yeah, no, I recall the dream. They're usually good dreams, actually. I would say I have had the odd nightmare with golf, but yeah, usually good.
We've always asked about the nightmares. I'm going to ask you too. Can you remember a nightmare you have? Because some of the best players we've had have had recurring nightmares about being on the golf course. And
really? Oh no, that's really bad.
And Crenshaw not being able to putt.
Ken Crenshaw, I can't putt, or I can't pull back, or
I mean that's the thing. It's like that's the fear of like not being able to swing it or whatever. I had one nightmare where whatever I did, the ball just kept going further and further right, and I couldn't stop the ball going further right. Do you know what I mean? Like so, whatever you do to drive,
that's like a round of mine.
It's 10 times around to me. No, not a nightmare.
That's reality.
Aim further left. Okay.
this is basically our favorite question. Why do you love this silly, stuffy old game?
Because you can always get better and you can never be perfect at it, but yet you are always striving for perfection. Isn't it ironic? Like you can't ever be perfect. There is no such thing as the perfect golf shot, yet we strive for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's one of those that you can always get better at it. And I love that idea.
Brilliant. Okay, let's get real. Those were the quick nine. Thank you very much.
Yeah, super. I mean, those were not only great answers, really, but it was really quick.
Really?
I thought it was quick.
Well, she answers. She's
yeah, I know. I mean,
time with her answer. Yeah, I think she knows absolutely. What she's about. You know.
Yeah.
let's see if she knows about this. Live golf.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. There's no way around the show without at least mentioning it or talking about it. We're talking more about money than about the game at the moment. Not only us, basically everyone.
Yeah.
Basically about millionaires getting richer and richer and richer for just showing up. What's your take on LIV Golf?
I think it's sad. over, you know, if I had to describe it in one word, it would be sad for the game. Because golf to me is a competition. Therefore, you've got to earn it. And that's the whole point of playing for these trophies, but ultimately they're playing for the money as well. I know the majors are different, I do believe, but these tour players week in, week out, whether they're female or male, you're playing for money because it's your job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You shouldn't just get money for turning up. But on the other hand, I understand completely why these players have done it. You know, they've been offered this money. If any other job, if you've been offered that paycheck, you take it.
Why don't they say that? They say they want to grow the game.
Yeah, they do. I'm not sure why. I don't know. Maybe they feel, you know, obviously I'm not a male golfer. Haven't been offered that type of money. Maybe that they feel another tour is required in the men's game to spread the word. Obviously, the PGA Tour is heavily based in America. Mm-hmm. And most of those players that have now gone to live played in America. Maybe they want to spread, say they want to spread the game in other parts of the world, in Asia, where it is growing rapidly. But I feel mainly it's because of the money, and they probably want to play less golf in the later end of their career, the older guys.
Yeah.
There's always been, I think the one of the most interesting questions is that we're always discussing how much money it is and growing the game. And for me, coming from a more left-wing sort of way of seeing the world, it does also matter where the money comes from. I think that's something that, you know, the US media has always put their fingers on it because of, you know, not only 9/11, but also because of the human rights discussion. And I've always found it very sad that nobody seems to be really willing to mix pop and politics or sports and politics with this, because it is major. It is a major sports washing scheme of the sorties. Have you got a point? Can you relate to that? Because that so many people might be against it because where the money is from.
Or, yeah, for sure. I'm sure that there's a lot.
You know, if you look at it and say, okay, right, it's like, how much did Mickelson get? 300 million?
200 million? 250
million? Right.
Yeah, I mean, the figures that the LIV Tour have got is just obscene. You know, it's money that you can't even really compute in your head, right? And that's before they've even hit a golf club.
Yeah,
so it does make it, but it's like the football, it's becoming like the football world, you mm-hmm. know. You look at those top players, what they earn a week from mm-hmm. just their salaries of their golf clubs, plus all the endorsements that they must have, right, behind the scenes, and bonuses and things, and I just think it ruins the sport when so much money is being put into it. And at such a disproportionate level.
But if the football players don't play well, they sit on the bench or they get cut.
Yeah, but they still get paid.
They still get paid, yes. But these guys, they don't even get cut, right?
No.
I mean, I have a thing. I have a weakness for Pat Perez. Number one, because of the hair. Obviously, I'm a big fan of hair. But to see these guys, well, okay, let's leave Pat aside for today. But I read an amazing stat that I think Dustin Johnson won more in 6 months.
Yeah.
In these 6 months than Xander Schauffele won his whole career.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, to me, it's unbelievable. And then I got to read an article, an interview with Lee Steinberg, the mega agent, the show me the money guy, who's telling me, oh, that my players who joined Live, they're worried about paying the mortgage. They're worried about paying
the mortgage. Yeah, no. It's ridiculous.
It's obscene. And I think sad is really, you know, because I get angry at this kind of stuff. And I think sad is a much better emotion for this, because it really is sad.
No, it really is sad for the game of golf, because it's such a great sport.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a bomb's gone off in the men's game in the mm-hmm. middle of it. And somehow, I have no problem with there being another tour out there. Competition in any business is good. Mm-hmm. You know, monopolies are never great. And it's right. just like, let's work together here, you know, and try and build something that's for the better of the game. Because mm-hmm. that's what we all want to see is we want to see, I want to see, going back to the Ryder Cup, I want to see the best 12 Americans play against the best 12 Europeans currently. Otherwise, to me, it's not fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we had this discussion also with Kyle Porter from CBS, whether LIV is tournament golf at all, you know, or whether it's just an exhibition. But yeah. maybe we can hook into here. I mean, number one, we have the LET, the Ladies European Tour. We have the LPGA. The disparity between the prize money there is already quite significant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is the LET a springboard, a feeder tour for the LPGA?
So at the moment, currently, so this year, the top 10 players on the LET Order of Merit will go advance straight through to the final stage of Q School for the LPGA. So in that respect, you would say, okay, well, it's a feeder tour. But what we are trying to do is create a tour that, yes, there's a pathway if you want to go that way, because it's definitely LPGA is the number one tour for women to play. If you want to be the world number one, if you want to earn the most money, you have to play on the LPGA. So we are trying to get a route through from the LET to the LPGA for those girls that want to. But also another thing that it has to be is also a tour that if you want to stay in Europe and you want to stay playing on the Ladies European Tour, you can still earn a living and still have a good life. And earnings from the Ladies European Tour, whereas the Epson Tour, which is directly the feeder tour to the LPGA in America, you can't live off that. The way the earnings are a lot less than our tour, and the whole purpose of it is you're on it for a year or two to learn your trade. If you're good enough, you're going to get onto the LPGA. If you're not good enough, then you need to move on to something else.
Maybe I used the wrong term, but just to understand what you just said, there's no free ticket from the LET to the LPGA. All you get is you get into the final stage of Q School.
You get into final stage of Q School.
Okay, because the top 25 on the DP, they automatically go to the PGA, right? Or the top 20 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. We don't. Currently we don't have that. We're looking to give maybe one or two cards. We're looking into it, but right now so last year the top five on the LET Order of Merit got into Q Series. Only four went, because the fifth was Pia Babnik, and I think she was only 17, 18 at the time, so she's still learning her trade. But out of the four that went, all four got their tour card. And currently Ataya, I think, is about to become number one in the world if she plays well next week or something. So, you know, we are creating those players, but and we're getting that depth. But we just need to prove to the LPGA tour that we can compete. We don't want an LPGA tour doesn't want girls going over, failing, and then, you know, messing with their head, messing with their golf, coming home. It just doesn't work. They have to be good enough to go over there. And we have to prove that our girls are good enough to compete out there.
Mm-hmm. I think this is brilliant, actually, because we have sort of without changed the theme. You are now not talking as a player, but you are talking as a member of the board. You do say we, you do, and you do.
How did you do like that, Mark? There was
I don't know how
she magic trick.
Yeah, it's magic, isn't it? But excellent, because I think a lot of our people in the audience will ask themselves, what is a player director? And we've already heard basically what the player director thinks or what she's doing. But would you care to just shed a bit of light on?
Yes. So, well, the Ladies European Tour is a limited company. And like that, we have a board. And at the moment, we've got two boards going, because we are Ladies European Tour Limited, and we're also Ladies European Tour joint venture with the LPGA, which has another board. So making it simple, the LET board is made up of three non-executives and three player directors. And then that board of six is then also the board on the LEGV, which is made up of the six LET representatives and then six LPGA representatives. So it's a combination of different types of people, but the player director's point of view is just to make sure that the players have a voice on the board of the company.
How do you become a player director?
You get voted by the players at the AGM. Okay. Yeah.
Wow. I know this is a very important subject, but this leads me to my question, which is the camaraderie among the women on the LET. Because the way you described it in the interview you had with Mark in the beginning here, how you share rental cars and you rent an Airbnb together, which to me was always, you know, when I started playing golf in the 80s, that's what was appealing to me about the European tour. You know, and that to me was always why the Ryder Cup went into the Europeans' favor, because we had that camaraderie where people traveled together and things like that. You've been doing this for 14 years.
Yeah.
You must have made a lot of good friends and see women come and go. And
it's great. I mean, the Ladies European Tour, the girls from America come back and say, I wish the LPGA was as friendly as this. You know, you are the friendliest tour. We're great. I love it how we can go out to dinner and there will be six, seven different nationalities all at the table. They all have to speak English because of me, because the English, we don't learn any other language, do we?
You're a director.
You know, and we'll share an Airbnb and we'll all do it from different countries. And we all support each other. We all help each other. We wouldn't leave anybody out in the cold. You know, if they needed somewhere to stay, we'd try and fit somebody else in. But then on the golf course, obviously we want to beat them. But if they beat us, they beat us fair and square. It's not like you're angry with them or, you know, you just play better than me.
Right.
And we can all have dinner together and be happy, you know, whoever did what. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about it. Playing in Europe is that fact. And like you said, of 14 years, I've made a lot of friends and they're all around the world. It's great holiday destinations. I'm actually going to just outside Innsbruck in January. To see one of my friends to go skiing with her because she lives there and I've been meaning to get there. So it's great. I get to see the world with my friends.
Mm-hmm. Mike?
Why should one give up on that?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you get to play golf all the time.
Yeah. As long as you can earn a living from it, then it's not a bad choice.
That's right.
There's one more question that it's still burning on my fingernails, and that's why I'm gonna answer it and ask it. The next Aramco Series tournament will be in Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
A country that knows nothing of women's rights. What's your take on that? As the player director, as the player, as a mother of a six-year-old.
Yeah, I'd say my view is the same for all of those. We probably went there, was it 2021, I think, maybe 20, we went there for the first time. I was very hesitant. I was very nervous. I made sure I was on a plane with some of my other friends. There was no way I was arriving at Jeddah Airport on my own for the first time. But when I got there, we stay in Economic Kingdom Abdul Economic City, I think it is, which is a new development, basically, of a golf course, some hotels and some housing development that hasn't been built yet on the coast of the Red Sea. You could be anywhere in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the hotel and we saw the golf course. We were treated very well. I felt very safe from start to finish. And so now probably I've been there about five times now. it's just another country on my list. Looking at from the view of women's rights, how women are treated out there. Yes, would I want my daughter to grow up in a country like that? No, definitely not. Not how it is now. But I feel the only way I can look at it is us going there. We do teach women at the golf course. We do clinics for women. They are Saudi women that turn up and play. With us being there, it gives us then that chance to show that they can try and change, or that even if this, you know, they've, since we've been there, women can drive a car, which hasn't been ever allowed. Okay. That's, to me, is ridiculous that a woman has never been able to drive a car. Why shouldn't they be? But it's a rule that has changed. Have they got a long way to go, in my opinion, for women's rights? Yeah, because I've been brought up in a Western world and culture. But if us going there helps them just that little bit, oh, wait, a woman can do this, then I feel that it's worth a try. Whether it works or not, you don't know. But if you don't try, then nothing's going to change. But if we can just show that the women just need those rights, more rights, should I say, you know, you have to respect their cultures, but you also have to show them our cultures and why we think it's a problem, and giving women the opportunity. Look at the Western world. The pay, I play in the same tournament as a male tournament. I don't get paid the same. I know theirs is more extreme, obviously, but nobody is perfect. And I think we just need to keep working on these issues. And I feel that us going to a country like Saudi Arabia, we're giving a chance. We're saying we're trying to help. We're trying to show you how, you know, women can play golf. And then they bring the women, you know, they have women that come, girls give clinics at the golf course, they play with the Saudi Arabian women. You know, the golf course that we play at has women members.
Yeah, I was reading up, actually, there is a female women's first initiative in Saudi golf. I was quite astonished, actually. It's really interesting, because it's a smaller, you know, there's a small impact. You are making an impact, or you believe you are making an impact. It's, as I understand with the LET, it is more about need than it is about greed. There is has been made this difference. The media has always stressed that the LET needs to survive, and it did survive with Aramco money.
100%. They we have those six events a year, which are sponsored by Aramco, and they're crucial to the LET schedule. They're great events. We play around the world.
An interesting format.
Different format. We get to play with amateurs, so it gives them an opportunity to play with a professional golfer in a tournament situation. And those events are vital to our schedule, and we get treated very well. The infrastructure at every event is fantastic. It's like a major. Girls get treated very well. So I look at it as if they're trying and we're trying. Mm-hmm. And let's keep trying, and things, let's hope, get better.
Well, I think you got to differentiate between playing in a tournament that is sponsored by Aramco, or wearing Aramco on your football shirt and being a club and that, or even naming rights for a tour like the DP World Tour. And let's face it, the Emiratis are let's leave them to the side. There's a big difference between that and actually working for them, like the LIV guys are doing now. I mean, they're employees. of
Live Golf is very different to the Ladies European Tour Aramco Series. It's chalk and cheese.
Because everything you hear is when, you know, when you criticize Live as well, you know, your TV is made in China. I mean, that's also the standard responses you hear, or you know, or you take oil from Russia or whatever, things like that. You know, so I think it's very important to make the difference. And Aramco used to be a joint venture between the Americans and the Saudis to begin with. It's not like a Saudi company. Do you feel a push, an aggressive push by the Saudis to put more money into the women's game? Maybe not push.
I think they're wanting to grow the women's game. Mm-hmm. They're wanting to show that, which is quite unique thinking of the Saudi Arabian women's rights issues, but they're wanting to prove that we want to support the women too.
Okay.
You know, you take the majors out of the Ladies European Tour schedule, and any event that we're co-sanctioned either with the DP World Tour or LPGA, they're our biggest events of the year.
Yeah.
By a long way.
Yeah.
You know, we play in a normal European event is between 200 and 500-600, and suddenly we're paying for a million.
Mm-hmm.
So they've already stepped the bar up for the Ladies European Tour, and it would be fantastic if they can grow it even further.
Mm. Yeah, well, you're, some of your American counterparts, like Lexi Thompson, have said some pretty strong words about how they feel about a Live Women's Tour. How do you guys react to that in Europe?
I think it would be really sad, because the women's game just wouldn't be able to fight it. And like any sport, you need your best players. You know, if the LPGA or the LET don't have their best players turning up, sponsors are going to disappear. And when the sponsors disappear, the money disappears.
Right.
And I think once that would be sad for golf, because I don't know how the women's game would actually survive if Liv suddenly went, we want to go into the women's game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we can't finish this on a sad note, Mark. Sing us a song.
No. I don't think it actually...
Maybe Liz can sing Bon Jovi for us.
No.
That'd be really sad.
That would be sad. No, I don't think it's sad, actually. I think it's very thoughtful and very mindful, because it's a completely different perspective. And as you said, there's a huge difference being an employee of a company like the Live guys are, or being part of a growing scene or hoping to grow the game with tournaments that are sponsored by Aramco. I think we could basically call it an evening or a night. That was the Golf Show with Liz Young, who hits it, finds it, hits it again, and has been doing that for quite some time. We have been talking a lot about chalk and cheese, and that was fantastic. Liz,
you going to defend in Switzerland?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. We're going to go there.
Not too far.
Yeah,
I'm going to go. I'm going to try to be in her pro-am.
Forget that. Mark is an excellent caddy.
I'm a better caddy than a player, actually.
Or a marshal, too.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mark Hollinger.
And I'm Frank Forster.
That was the Golf Show with Liz Young. Liz, thanks for being here. To the links.
Bye-bye.